Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, science fiction. Later on, it's Murder at Midnight from 1947. But first, Dimension X with a story called Child's Play. First heard on NBC on June 24th, 1951.
Adventures in Time and Space. Transcribed in Future Tense.
Dimension X.
The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, bring you Dimension X. In these times, even a child knows the meaning of atomic fission, jet propulsion, and electronic transmission. What, we ask ourselves, will the child of the future know? What of the time when science unlocks the secret of life itself? Could it be that one day, such things as constructing human life or passing back and forth from one dimension to another will become mere child's play?
My name is Sam Weber. I'm an attorney, and a pretty successful one, if I do say so myself. My wife, Tina, and I live in a comfortable 12-room place up in Westchester. Now, I've read a lot of Horatio Alger stuff in my time, and so have you probably, but I'll bet you've never heard anything quite as spectacular as my story. Maybe you won't believe it, but I used to be a completely different guy. Frightened, sickly, nearsighted, a real Mortimer Meek. No kidding. That was 5 years ago. The big change in me began to take place on a cold December morning in 1945.
Just a moment, please. Yes, please.
Weber?
Yes.
Samuel?
That's right.
Step back. Okay, fellas, bring it in.
Oh, just a moment. You must have the wrong address.
Watch it, buddy. All right, sign here.
Is that for me?
Weber Apartments.
Looks like a coffin.
I don't design them, Jack. I just deliver them. Sign here.
After much straining, I wasn't in very good physical shape those days, I managed to push the box under my single light bulb. There was a card in a small envelope.
Let's see. To Sam from your classmates at the Interdimensional and Cosmic Institute. Merry Christmas. 2145 A.D. Holy jumping catfish. Hey, mister, there must be some mistake. Hey! Holy jumping catfish.
They were gone, and I didn't even know which delivery company it was. Well, I finally decided to open it up and see what was in it. After about a half hour of fumbling, I gave up.
All right, then, don't open.
No sooner had I said the word open than it came apart like the skin off a banana. There inside was something resembling a kid's chemical set. Vials, jars, tubes, wires. You never saw so much scientific-looking junk in your life. And on top of it all was a book of instructions.
Build a man set number 3. This set is intended solely for uses of children between the ages of 11 and 13. The equipment will enable the child to build and assemble complete adult humans in perfect working order. A disassemblator is provided so the set may be used over again. Refills and additional parts may be acquired from the Build-A-Man Company, 928 Diagonal Level, Glunt City, Ohio. Remember, only with Build-A-Man can you build a man.
When I left for work that morning, my brain was still reeling with the stuff I'd read in the instruction book.
Jack, attorney at law. Just a moment, I will connect you with Mr. O'Jack. Oh, good morning, Mr. Weber.
Good neuron. I mean, good morning. I've got to get my mind off that book.
Only with Build a Man can you build a man. Chapter 1, Making Simple Living Things. Chapter 2, Duplicating Babies and Other Small Humans.
Oh, no. I've got to get a grip on myself. Do a little work. O'Brien versus O'Brien. Martin versus the city of New York. Oh, it must have been a dream. Probably go home tonight and find the place empty.
Well, 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 if it isn't the poor man's Clarence Darrell.
Oh. Hello, Lou.
I come as a bearer of sad tidings.
Well, you don't look very sad.
The boss wants to see you, laughing boy.
What about?
How should I know? Oh, and by the way, you'll be very happy to know that I've just been promoted. I'm handling all the criminal stuff from now on.
Congratulations.
You know what this means for Tina and me, don't you, Junior? Oh, well, cheer up. Tina's not for you anyway. Some got it, some don't. I got it, you don't. So long, laughing boy.
That was my good friend, Lou White. In the year I'd known him, he'd already managed to steal a job I wanted, and he was now working on the girl I wanted. Her name was Tina. Tina Velvet.
Good morning, Sam.
Oh, good morning, Tina. My, you look good enough to...
Yes?
Take to lunch.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sam, but I promised Lou.
Oh, sure.
I hope you're not too disappointed.
Me? Oh, no, no. Some got it, some don't. I don't.
And that was Tina. I tried to steady my blood pressure as I walked into the boss's office.
You sent for me, Mr. Rojak?
Oh, yes. Sit down, Weber. Sit down.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Rojak.
Weber, I've been reviewing the work of my staff counselors for the past 6 months. I want to know only one thing.
Yes, sir?
What happened?
I don't understand.
You haven't had a single new client in 6 months.
But no one has come in, Mr. Rojak.
My boy, in this business, you've got to be aggressive. You've got to go out and create new clients. You've got to show some zip.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any zip?
Oh, yes, yes, Mr. Rojak. Oh, I've got zip, all right. I just can't seem to turn it loose, that's
well,
all.
Well, get in there and punch now, Weber. I want to see a change in you in the next few months. As a matter of fact, I'd better. You got that?
Yes, Mr. Rojak. I'll try to show some zip.
I left the office early and went home. Sure enough, there it was, my Build-A-Man set, gleaming a little obscenely in the corner. I walked over to it, gave it a kick, and hollered,
"Open sesame."
3 minutes later, I was flopped down in bed reading...
Chapter 1, Making Simple Living Things.
An hour later, I was fooling around with such complicated items as the Junior Biocalibrator, which measured everything from blood pressure to hemoglobin content, and the Jiffy Vitalizer, which was actually supposed to put life in your creation, providing you had followed instructions carefully. At 8:30... I made my first simple living thing.
Here, boy. Here, boy. Oh, maybe you aren't a boy. Well, let's see. According to the book, you are a rubicular oyster hog. Not much to look at, but I made you. Me, Sam Weber, attorney at law. I have created life. Hey, come back here. Come back. Here, boy. Here, boy. Hey, hey, hey.
It was no use. My rubicular oyster hog, which was a cross between a field mouse and an oyster, had run out under the door and into the world. I was about to take off after it when there was a knock on my door. It was Mrs. LaPanty, my landlady.
Oh, hello, Mrs. LaPanty.
I heard a noise.
Oh, just rehearsing a speech I have to make in court.
You were squeaking.
A bad throat.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, by the way, there was a gentleman looking for you this afternoon.
A gentleman?
Yeah, a tall old man in a black overcoat. Kind of nasty. Well, I told him he wasn't anyone to go up to your room. Tell you, I showed him the way out in a hurry.
Oh, thanks, Mrs. LaPanty. Probably a bill collector.
Yeah. Well, I gotta run.
Here's that memo on Rosenthal versus Rosenthal, and also a letter for...
What's the matter? You look tired.
Well, I had a bad night.
Your lumbago again?
Yes.
Oh, say, by the way, your client was here again this morning.
A client?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it must be the same fella that called at my house the other day. Yeah. Well, what did you tell him?
Oh, I said you'd be in later.
Oh, thanks.
Will that be all, Sam?
Yes. Oh, no. Are you doing anything New Year's Eve?
Oh, Sam, you haven't even noticed.
Noticed what?
Well, the ring, silly. Third finger, left hand.
What?
Lou gave it to me. Isn't it simply gigantic?
But you're not...
We're going to be married as soon as Lou finishes his next case. Lou is so sharp and businesslike.
So is a guillotine.
Sam, after Lou gave me the ring last night, I began thinking how I used to hope that it would be you. But, well, then I realized you'd never have the money, and, well, a girl has to think of things like a good steady income and a husband with...
Zip.
Yes, with zip.
Well, Lou has plenty of zip. I'm sure you'll be very happy zipping around with each other.
Oh, Sam.
Well, Sam, I... Hey, what's going on in here? Honey, is this little baboon giving you any trouble? If he has, I'll take him apart like an egg crate.
No. Take it easy, Strongheart. Tina just told me the good news about your engagement. She's crying with happiness.
Is that right, honey? Well, then, no hard feelings, Sam. Just that the best man got the girl, you understand. Oh, say, by the way, we're having a little celebration at Sigali's tonight. Drop in and we'll live it up a little, huh?
I went home feeling like a man who has been stuffed into a washing machine with the dial set at rinse dry. I was a failure. I walked over to the mirror for a heart-to-heart talk with myself.
Nothing. That's what you've got, Sam Weber, in unlimited quantities. Nothing. We ought to just tear you down and start all over again. We ought to take you... Hey. Oh, no. No, not that again. But why not? Think of it. A Sam Weber without the psychological problems you've got. A dynamic, uninhibited Sam who could win a girl like Tina by sheer magnetism. Then when it was all over, we could just take the old disassembler and presto. And I can do it, too. Chromosome content. Check. Cerebral content. Maybe a little more id and a little less superego. Limbs, eyes, hair, general endocrine reaction. Well, here goes. It's moving. Holy mackerel, it's alive. It's getting up.
Say, I feel great.
Oh, now, take it easy. Do you know who you are?
Of course I do. I have all the thoughts you ever had up until the point I was vitalized. My brain is an exact duplicate of yours, except that I'm not all blocked up psychologically.
Right. It said in the instruction manual you'd be uninhibited.
Say, this is all right. Oh, by the way, since we both have the same name, it'll simplify things if I call you Weber. I'll be Sam.
Oh, now look here. I'll make the decision.
How would you like a good punch in the nose?
Well, is that any way to talk to your own parent? I did create you, you know.
Well, don't think I don't appreciate it, Weber, old man, but let's get one thing straight. I live my life and you live yours. You got that?
Who pays the rent?
You do, for a while anyway. I haven't decided whether or not I want to stay in the law business.
The law business?
I may want to spread out a little. Tina's the kind of girl to whom money is very important.
Tina?
Well, what did you expect? I have enough of your likes and dislikes to want her just as badly as you do. The only difference being that I can get her. No, we're not quite the same, you and I. I've got zip.
Don't use that word.
Now, how about some dinner? You know, I'm starved.
I'll have to go out.
I'll need some clothes.
Sorry, I only have this one suit.
Fine, you can lend it to me.
Well, what about me?
I'll bring you a sandwich after I come back from Sigali's.
Sigali's?
Well, you haven't forgotten, have you, Weber? We're invited to the celebration, Tina and Lou White. Only it wouldn't look quite right if we both showed up, so I'll tell you all about it. Now, off with that suit, and no nonsense.
Well, this is living it up, folks. Have another drink, Mr. O'Jack.
Thank you, Lou.
Well, is everybody happy?
Hey, honey, are you having yourself a little old time?
Oh, yes, Lou. Fine.
Yeah, but you seem to be preoccupied.
Oh, I was just wondering if Sam is coming.
Sam? Oh, no. Did you hear that, Mr. O'Jack? She's worrying about Sam. Why, that little runt probably got frightened by a noisemaker.
Well, the happy couple.
Sam!
Good evening, cats. Everybody's lit up like a Christmas tree.
Well, I'll be... Say, Sam, are you in the bag?
Never touch the stuff, Luma boy. Never touch it. Boy Scout training.
Oh, Sam, I was afraid you weren't coming.
Miss a chance to be with you, beautiful. Never.
Hey, what's got into you, Weber? Monkey glands?
I don't read you, muscle bound.
Well, you seem different somehow, even your voice.
Do you notice anything, Tina?
Well, yes, it does seem richer somehow.
Oh, nonsense. Sam Weber, you're nothing but a cream puff, and you always will be.
Mr. O'Jack, I think he owes me an apology for that.
I should think so.
All right, all-American boy, make with the apology.
Apologize me? Oh, no. Why, for 2 cents?
Folks, would you excuse Mr. White and me for a few minutes? We want to step out into the hall for a little private conference. Coming, Mr. White?
I'll be right back, honey. Don't worry about a thing.
Okay, big boy, you've taken enough punishment. Now.
Sam! Lou, don't kill him. He did... Oh, dear.
He'll be all right in a little while, baby.
But did you... I mean... Oh, Sam.
Tina.
We really shouldn't kiss like this.
It's what you've always wanted, isn't it? Well, isn't it?
Oh, Sam.
By this time, he's probably kissing her. And there's nothing you can do about it, Weber, old man. Nothing. Hey. Wait a minute. Where's that book of instructions? To disassemble a Build-A-Man model, merely focus the ray of the disassembler device and press lever X. But that's murder, Counselor. Still, legally, in order to prove there's been a murder, you need a corpus delicti. And nobody even knows there is another Sam Weber. Oh, so you're finally home. I'm starved.
Sorry, Weber, old man, but very pressing business detained me.
I suppose you made a fool of me over at Sir Galley's.
Oh, on the contrary.
What do you mean?
My boy, you were looking at a man who in one fell swoop has got himself a raise, a promotion, and a wife. At least she'll be my wife tomorrow.
Who?
Tina, of course.
I don't believe it.
I had to put on quite a show, but all around it was a real success. Mr. O'Jack was so impressed, he called me aside and said he was going to give me a crack at some criminal cases. And if I made the grade, why, who knows, I may even accept a partnership.
You've got it all figured out, haven't you?
That's about it.
Only you neglected to consider one thing.
Oh, what's that?
This.
Hey, put that down.
Get back, you. You usurper, you. I'm going to melt you down like a Welsh rarebit.
Weber, you can't do that. It's murder. It's like killing your own son.
After what you've done to me, it's a pleasure.
I didn't ask to be brought into this world, but now that I'm here, I like it enough to want to survive.
Take off my suit, you phony. You won't be needing it again.
You're really going through with it, huh?
I am.
All right. Oh, here's your jacket.
My arm!
Give me that thing. Give it to me. That's better. Now, we'll fix this little item so it can't do any damage.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you see, Weber? You don't have the guts to stand up against the man you might have been.
Oh, what's that sound?
I don't know.
Seems to be inside the house.
Somebody's coming up the stairs. Listen. Take a peek through the keyhole, Weber.
Yeah.
jump. It's him.
Who?
The old man with the black coat. His eyes all black and shiny without any whites. Looks insane. Don't open it. Hey, he's burning it. He's burning a hole right through the door.
Good evening, gentlemen. As I feared, I'm too late to prevent you from duplication, Mr. Weber. And I see that you have destroyed the disassembler. That means I shall have to do the job manually. An ugly task.
Well, who are you?
I am the census keeper for the 24th Oblong. You see, your Bilderman set was intended for one of the Weber children who is on a field trip in this Oblong 200 years from now. Because of an unfortunate time warp, the set was delivered here accidentally.
You mean this set came here from 200 years from now?
Precisely. Time, as with all things, is relative. We shall have to recover the set, of course, and adjust any discrepancies it has caused. But meanwhile, the problem is, which of you two gentlemen is the original Sam Weber?
Oh, I am. Listen,
difficulties, difficulties. Why cannot I ever have a simple case like a double conuplication?
Now, look here, Mr. Census Keeper. The duplicate will obviously be less stable and more emotionally unbalanced. Certainly, a man of your qualifications can decide which of us is the more valid member of society. Which of us will conform more readily to the standards.
Naturally. I observe that one of you is naked.
Oh, wait a minute.
And you also seem to be trembling, whereas this gentleman seems quite calm.
Then hold it. You're making a mistake.
I hardly think so.
Then stay away
from
me.
Please do not struggle.
Help, please, you...
Mr. Weber.
Yes?
It would be better if you didn't watch.
Of course.
Well, that's my story. Within 10 seconds, the old Sam Weber had been completely dismantled and packed into the box. Tina and I were married, and I went on to become a full partner in the firm of Ojak, Somerset, and Weber. Oh, and by the way, Tina and I have been doing quite successfully what the old Sam Weber and his Build a Man set made such a mess of. We have 1, 2, 3 little conuplications. Sam Jr., age 4, Sametta, age 3, and Samina, age 4 months. Good night.
You have just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future. The world of...
Dimension X.
Time is a strange and mysterious dimension. Could we alter the future if we could travel back in time to our own youth? Next week, we bring you a story of a man who found the answer in time and time again.
Dimension X is presented, transcribed each week by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of the magazine Astounding Science Fiction. Today, Dimension X is presented Child's Play, written for radio by George Lefferts from the story by William Ten. Featured in the cast were Leon Janney as Sam, Carl Weber as his alter ego, and Patsy Campbell as his girl. Your host was Norman Rose, music by Bert Berman. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Fred Way.
In reply to many queries from our listeners, last week's story on Dimension X, Pebble in the Sky, was written by Isaac Asimov. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Dimension X, Untuned to Yesterday, first heard on the 24th of June, 1951, on NBC. The story would be used again on NBC's equally, if not more, popular sci-fi show, X-1, in October of 1955. You're listening to an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for a story that's a mix of science fiction and horror on Murder at Midnight, called Terror Out of Space. This episode first heard in syndication on February 24th, 1947.
And started to walk across the room, and as he turned, Martell moved. His face stayed dead, expressionless, but he moved. He picked up a heavy wrench, followed him, and then as Roy reached for the switch, he hit him.
No!
I heard his skull go like a rotten pumpkin shell, and he went down. Then Martell picked up a hacksaw and... No, no, I don't want to remember the rest. It was too awful, too horrible.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Terror Out of Space. Murder at Midnight, Tales of Mystery and Terror by radio's Masters of the Macabre. Our story, which we prophesy will be long remembered as a classic, is by Robert Newman. A tale out of the news and out of man's deepest fears called Terror Out of Space.
Larkin, John. Can you hear me? You've got to hear me. I haven't got much time. They'll be coming back in a few minutes and... Don! Try and get this. Try and remember. Remember.
I sat up in bed, straining my ears, listening. The surf was rolling and pounding on the beach at the foot of the cliff. One of the dynamos was purring away next door in the experimentation shack. And that was all. Had I really heard anything, or had I just imagined it, dreamed it? I didn't know. All I knew was that I was in a cold sweat, shivering, even though it was a hot summer's night. But that wasn't surprising after what had happened. Just what had happened? Maybe I could get it all straight, fill in the gaps that had been bothering me if I went back over it again from the beginning. I hadn't wanted to before this. I'd fought against even thinking about it. But now... Now it was as if something was making me think about it.
That's right, John. Start way back, in the beginning. Then maybe you will remember. You've got to.
When was the beginning? When they assigned me here, I guess, miles from anywhere on the Jersey coast. I knew it was some kind of hush-hush project, and I'd been in the Army long enough not to ask questions. I had some ideas, though. And when I walked into administration and found Professor Martell there, I was pretty sure they were right. Lieutenant Larkin reporting for duty, sir.
Hello, John. How are you?
Fine, Professor. Major.
Well, let's forget the Major. I've been trying to. I think the Army's a little sorry about the whole thing also.
Well, that's not the way I heard it. Some of the things you've worked out in the last few years were something. Quite a break, my getting assigned here.
You think it was an accident?
You mean you requested me?
Of course. What did I take you away from, by the way?
Oh, nothing very much. Straight communications, a little radar.
No chance to continue any of the research you started when you were at the university, huh?
No. Afraid I've gotten rusty?
Not really. But there are just going to be the three of us to do the bulk of the work. You, myself, and a chap named Roy Shields. He worked with Ramsey at Tech.
And what's the project? Something big?
I think so. We're going to try and establish radio contact with the moon.
What?
Theoretically, it shouldn't be too difficult, you know.
Of course. And with the progress we've made during the war, Oh, Professor, it's terrific. One of the most exciting things I've ever heard of.
Think so?
Well, don't you? Don't you remember when we used to talk about it in the lab? What it would mean to the astronomers, the astrophysicists, measurements that they've never even been able to take before?
Yes, John, I remember.
Well, then?
I don't know. Somehow it... Well, it worries me.
How we're going to do it?
No, that's all cut and dried. What's going to happen when we do do it?
What do you mean?
We're reaching out, John. Reaching out into places where man has never been before. We're pretty close to the secret of matter, to the origin of life, and to the mystery of the universe. Sometimes I become a little afraid. Afraid that we may stumble on something that's too much for us, too big. That's silly. Go pick out a bunk and get some rest, John. Tomorrow, we go to work.
The work? I remember that all right, weeks of it. And finally, the big night, the night we were ready for our first test. It was clear and cool, the ocean still, not thundering, but whispering at the base of the cliffs, as if it were waiting. Every star separate and distinct, like signposts on the road to the infinite. Martell at the table in the center of the laboratory with the charts and diagrams doing the computing. Roy at the power controls, and I at the director.
Time?
23:02.
15 seconds. Power, 10.12.
Check.
Your reading, John?
93 degrees.
Make it plus 0.2.
Check.
Time? 23:02:10.
Power on. 3 seconds. 4. Now.
How long to wait?
We should get it almost immediately. A lag of not more than... There! Listen!
Huh? That's it! That's it! We've done it! We're in contact with the moon!
Yes, we've done it. Reached out into space and done it. For the first time since man had walked erect, we had established contact with another heavenly body. Bridged the infinite with man-made electrical impulses. There was no work done during the next 2 days, just excitement. Public relations broke the story the next morning, and we were swamped. Newspaper reporters, photographers, interviews, commentaries, prophecies. Finally, we got back to normal. And a couple of nights later... Yes. It's starting to come back to me now. I remember. It was the sound of the generators that woke me. I looked at my watch, almost midnight. Roy was asleep in his bunk, and I didn't wake him. I padded out along the duckboards to the laboratory. The lights were on. I went in, and there was Professor Martell. He was sitting at the control table, and he was... Well, he was funny. His eyes were open, but he didn't seem to see me. I said, "Hello, Professor." He didn't move. He didn't answer. I took a quick look at the control board, and the frequency had been changed. A little uneasy, I tried again. "Professor, what are you doing?" And then something very strange happened. Half of him came alive. His right side first. His right eye lighting up, while his left eye stayed dead. His right hand twitched, while his left one remained stiff. It was just for a fraction of a second. Then...
What? Oh. Hello, John.
Hello, Professor. Anything the matter?
Matter? What am I doing in here?
I don't know, sir. I heard the generators go on, and I came in and found you here.
Strange. Very strange. I went to bed about 10:30.
Ever walked in your sleep before?
No, not that I know of. Of course, I haven't been sleeping too well lately. Very disturbing dream. Did you change the transmitter frequency that way?
But, no, sir. You must have done it yourself in your sleep.
Funny. That would make it more of a carrier instead of a transmitter wave.
Shall I shift it back?
No, leave it. I'd like to take a look again in the morning. Do some thinking about it.
The next morning, somehow... Neither of us mentioned it. I can't be sure now whether we didn't remember or just didn't think it was important. But that night... Yes. Yes, it was that night that we discovered what it meant. That we knew... It was the sound of the generators that woke me again. I looked at my watch a few minutes before midnight. And it was then that I noticed that Roy wasn't in his bunk. I lay there. And for some reason, I was terrified, trembling. There was something in the air, a feeling of menace that... I made myself get up. Slipped on a pair of sneakers and went out along the duckwalk to the laboratory. The lights were on again. I didn't go in this time, but I looked in the window. There was Roy, and there was Professor Martell again. He was sitting at the control table with that sane, dead look on his face. And Roy was standing in front of him, talking to him. I could hear him through the window.
What is it, sir? What's going on? Is anything the matter? Sleep? Walking in his sleep? I better get Larkin and... Oh, I can't leave the generator on, though. Gotta shut that off first.
He turned and started to walk across the room toward the master switch. And as he turned, Martell moved. His face stayed dead, expressionless, but he moved. He got up without a sound, took a heavy wrench from the work table, and followed Roy. And then, just as Roy put out his hand to throw the switch, he hit him.
Oh!
I heard his skull go like the shell of a rotten pumpkin, and he went down, dead. I couldn't move. I couldn't make a sound. I just stood there, frozen with horror. Martell looked down at him without batting an eye. And then, like a zombie, he walked over to the bench, picked up a hacksaw and went back. And then, bending over Roy's body, he started cutting off the top of his head.
A voice from the void. And the midnight waking. Memories. Things best forgotten. Coming back again. Memories of the terror that came out of space and of...
Murder! At midnight!
Now, back to Murder at Midnight and Terror Out of Space.
That's all I remember then. When Professor Martell bent over Roy's body with a hacksaw in his hand, I must have fainted. When I opened my eyes, I was lying on the sand outside the shack, and there was Martell bending over me. No, Professor, no, don't!
Why,
don't,
John. What's the matter?
Leave me alone. Don't come near me. Don't touch me. I saw what you did in there.
And where? When?
Just now in the shack to Roy.
Aren't you well either, John?
What do you mean?
I just came up here from the cottage. I had a bad dream. I've been having quite a few of them lately, and I woke up with a very annoying headache. I came out to take a walk, get some air. I found you lying
but,
here.
But I'm telling you, I saw you. I saw you in there with Roy and...
And what?
Well, I don't even want to think about it. But you killed him.
Killed him? Huh. Let's go back to the bunkhouse, John. Take a look.
The bunkhouse?
Yes, when you see that Roy is where we should be, in bed, maybe it'll convince you that you either dreamed or imagined the whole thing.
He led the way to the bunkhouse, and I followed. Still shaken, but starting to feel a little foolish. This was the Professor Martell I had studied under, known for years, the man who wouldn't hurt a fly. We went into the bunkhouse, and Roy's bed was empty. He wasn't there. Martell gave me a funny look and started calling.
Roy! Roy, where are you? Roy!
Without a word, we hurried back to the laboratory, and there was no sign of him there either. Nothing. Wait, he must have gone out for a walk too, Professor, or maybe jeeped into town. If it was true, there'd be something here. His body, blood...
There, John.
Well, right there, in front of the switch. But there's nothing there.
No. Except that it looks as if this floor was just scrubbed.
The floor... What? You're right.
John!
Huh?
Did you change the transmitter frequency this way?
But no, sir. You must have done it. Just the way you did last night.
Last night? You mean something happened last night, too?
You don't remember?
No. Tell me what you saw happen tonight. Everything you remember, whether you believe it now or not.
Well, it was pretty terrible, Professor.
He was sitting there. And then, as quietly as if he were a laboratory specimen, you took a hacksaw and started to cut off the top of his head.
Merciful heavens.
Talking to you now, I know the whole thing's mad, impossible, but...
Yes, mad, impossible, but...
You mean it could have happened some way without your knowing it?
Sit down, John. Relax. Tell me what you know about the moon.
The moon is a satellite, a stellar body, probably formed by our sun in an encounter with some other stellar body.
Yes, yes, probably formed at the same time as the Earth. But it may very well have supported life long before there was life here.
Life? But we know what its atmosphere is.
We know what it is now. But how do we know what it was a million, several million years ago? Suppose, just suppose, that there was life there millions of years ago. Life that reached a level of development we cannot even imagine. Suppose it died out as a form of life that we could recognize, but remained in a form that is eternal.
What do you mean?
In the form of electrical energy. We know that thought is an electrical process. An electrocephalograph will give a definite reading when a man is thinking.
Yes.
Suppose intelligences continue to exist on the moon in the form of complex electric charges. And suppose a channel is suddenly opened between the moon and some other planet.
The beams we sent out are our radar beams. You mean they could come down the beam, take hold of someone, you, and make you...
I'm supposing, John. Hypothesizing. But the fact is that the transmitter was set at carrier frequency, and none of us did it consciously. Of course, even if it's true, we have no way of knowing whether these entities are dangerous, malevolent, or not.
No way of knowing, but they killed. They made you kill Roy.
Because he was going to shut off the transmitter, cut off contact with the place they came from. As for the rest, well, they would be intensely curious about the human body, particularly the brain. They would want to examine it.
Good Lord, Professor, do you realize what you're saying? The taking over of a person's body?
Yes, John, I do realize what I'm saying. Well, I don't believe it myself. Have you a gun?
Yes. Yes, I never carry it. But...
Well, start carrying it. And if you notice me doing anything strange, incomprehensible, don't hesitate. Shoot.
I didn't sleep that night. I remember that now. And I was convinced that I would never sleep again. Because it was there then, the moon. It was there all the time, of course, day and night. But it was during the night when I was asleep that it would be easiest for them, that they might try and... No, I can't think about it. I won't even now. With the daylight, I felt a little better. Roy hadn't come back, but, well, there were a dozen possible explanations for that. I went to have another talk with Professor Martell. And he was gone, too. His bed was empty, as if it had never been slept in. I waited until about noon. Then I called headquarters. I had decided that I was going to tell them only facts, things I could believe myself.
Hello?
Hello, Colonel. This is Larkin over at Radar Experimental.
Oh, yes, Larkin. How are you?
Pretty good, sir. I'd like to report that both Sergeant Shields and Major Martell are missing.
Huh? Missing? What do you mean?
I don't know, sir. They were both gone when I got up this morning.
A.W.O. Why don't you go missing, too?
Oh, no, sir. I couldn't. Not right now.
Okay. Then you carry on until they get back, and then I'll arrange for you to do it officially.
So I stayed. Stayed there in the lonely shack on top of the cliff, alone. And that was the most awful, terrible week of my life. Only the wind, the pounding of the surf, and my fears. Fears that were with me constantly. There was work I had to do, but I had to force myself to go into the laboratory. Then, on Friday, they found Roy's body. A phone call took me to town to the local funeral parlor. When I got there, the colonel was waiting.
You knew Sergeant Shields pretty well, didn't you, Larkin?
Yes, sir.
Some fishermen found a body in their nets this morning. I wish you'd look at it.
Of course, sir.
Right here.
Good Lord.
Evidently, the fish were pretty hungry.
Well, no one could be sure, sir, but I think that is Shields.
All right, Larkin. Thank you.
Yes, they found Roy's body. And that night, Martell came back. I'd taken something to make me sleep. It was the only way I could sleep. But the sound of the generators woke me again. I lay there listening, unbelieving but terrified because there was no one at the station but me. Then, picking up my gun, I went down the duck walk to the laboratory. I opened the door, and there he was, Professor Martell. His face was thin, haggard. His eyes were dead, lackluster, the way they'd been those other two nights. And when he spoke, his voice was hardly human, as if someone was using him, speaking through him.
Too bad that you woke up, Larkin. You should not have come in here.
What do you mean, Professor? Where have you been?
We have been looking over your planet, studying it. Very interesting. And now we are ready to go.
Go? Go where? What are you talking about? You said we. Professor Martell, have they...
Just a few preparations to make. And then...
The voice, that horrible voice, stopped. And Martell swayed as if he were going to fall.
I grabbed him, and he opened his eyes.
He was himself again. And when he spoke, it was with his own voice.
John, for heaven's sake, help me. Help me.
How, Professor, how?
Your gun. What I told you, don't you remember? Don't you understand? They've got me. They took me that night. Took me all over the country. Looking, examining, studying. They picked my brain. They sucked me dry. And now they're going to take me back with them.
Back with them?
Back to where they came from. Not my body, they're not interested in that. But the essential me. In heaven's name, shoot, John. Shoot and...
And now we are ready.
They had him again.
As your friend told you, we are taking him with us. But you will not remember. You will remember nothing, do you understand? Because someday we may come back.
I stood there, frozen, still holding on to Martell. Like a sleepwalker with superhuman strength, he pushed me away. I staggered back against the wall. Stiffly and mechanically, he walked to the door, opened it, and went out. The surf was thundering, the wind blowing. Straight to the edge of the cliff he walked, and then went over. But before he fell, he seemed almost to hover for a moment, as if something in him was going not down, but up.
Now, do you remember, John? Now, do you remember? You've got to remember. You've got to. I tricked them. Fooled them. That's how I was able to get through to you. But they'll be coming for me any minute and... John! You've got to do something. You've got to. It's true. They do exist. And they've got me here. They may be coming back again for others. They... John! They're coming! They're coming! Do something! Go!
When I woke up about a half hour ago, I found this all written out on the pad I keep next to my bed. Written out in my own handwriting, but a little scrawled and jerky as if my hand wasn't quite steady. Some of it I remember. Other parts, like Roy's murder, Professor Martell's suicide, I don't recall at all. Either I'm mad, completely mad, or... No, I can't think about it. I mustn't. Anyway, if I showed this to anyone, the world would think I'm mad. So now I'm going to burn it. Burn it up completely.
White and shaking, John Larkin tears the scrawled pages from his notebook, crumples them into an ashtray, and puts a match to them. And thus there disappears into ashes the only remaining evidence of the terror from out of space and of...
Murder! At midnight!
¶¶ Remember to be with us again when death comes in some unknown form. And the clocks strike 12 for
Murder at Midnight.
The part of John Larkin was played by George Petrie, and Peter Capel was Professor Martell. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
At Midnight on Tuned to Yesterday from February 24th, 1947. And that wraps up this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonia. It's been a pleasure.